Welcome to episode 7 of the Trail Talk podcast. I'm super stoked to have you guys along today for two reasons in particular. First reason is that today's guest is, simply put, awesome. You guys love her online. She's an inspiration. Her husband, and her two dogs not only inspire us, but they educate us, and they take us along for their journey on Instagram and online, and I know you're going to be super stoked to hear from her. But before I touch upon her story and everything that we're going to discuss, I want to talk about the other reason that I'm super excited, and that's about a brand new page that we just launched, and it is a Trail Dogs Patreon page. If you guys aren't familiar with Patreon, it's basically a way to trade exclusive content from us or from a creator in exchange for a few dollars. And those few dollars come from community members and our podcast listeners that want to support everything we're doing here. Because for 2 years, we've created podcasts, YouTube videos, websites, everything you guys have seen. And it's all been on our tab, and that is totally fine. But in order to push the limits and go further and continue educating and inspiring at a level that we really want to, we are going to need a little bit of support, and this allows us to do it in a very simple way and also offer exclusive content to those that are able to support us. It's definitely not a requirement. Don't worry, all the free content's still going to keep coming. This is just some extra stuff for those people that are able to give up a coffee or something one day and throw a few dollars our way and support everything we're doing for humans and the dogs. So check it out. You can go to www.patreon.com. That's patreon.com/traildogs, and that'll take you to our Patreon page. You can look on the side column and check out the different reward options. They start at $1 per month, and you can check them out from there. We're giving out some really good content and also doing some exclusive giveaways, including a Roughwear pack if we hit enough patrons. So check it out. I'm not going to keep rambling about it. It's a really cool way for us to gain support for everything we're doing and, like I said, push things further, but also offer something in return rather than just begging for money, which is not what we're about by any means. So anyways, back to episode 7. You guys are going to be very, very excited to know that we are sitting down with Brianna Madia today, and this is an interview that I think a lot of people not only want to have, but want to hear. And we dive into a whole range of topics, but it goes right in line with what our mission was with this podcast of going beyond the Instagram page. We all see Brianna and Keith and their dogs and all of the journeys they take together, but we don't get to hear the stories of how they got there and what day-to-day life is like. In this episode, I'm happy to say that we talk about everything from a little bit of van life, what it's like to have a difficult dog or a dog that presents challenges. We also talk about how dogs can be so different, and we dive into a topic that is completely under-discussed in a lot of the dog scene, and that's if you can't handle your dog, giving up a dog or giving up on a dog after a certain point does not necessarily mean failure. In Brianna and Keith's case, other families had given up the dog that they have now. And hearing their side of things is a really refreshing viewpoint on a topic where we normally criticize those who drop a dog off at a shelter or give up on a dog that they've been working with. And not saying that everyone should just, at the drop of a hat, give up on the dogs that they have because they're going through a hard time, but just to get a different perspective on it and hear a refreshing viewpoint from Brianna is really interesting, and I think you'll enjoy it. And we even talk about the little things in this podcast, everything down to how Bucket got her name, which I know you guys are going to love. So once again, going beyond the Instagram page, diving in to the life of two influencers that we cherish and value and follow so strongly, and someone that's really just made such a strong impact. The four of them have made such a strong impact on the dog scene and on all of those that are following them. Without further ado, guys, I want to get started with episode 7.
Okay, boy. Let's go.
And now, your host of the Trail Talk Podcast, Anthony Fanucci.
What's up, everybody? You are going to be on cloud nine when you hear who we're talking with today. I'm super stoked to bring one of your favorite Instagrammers, life lovers, and one of the coolest dog-loving people that I'm sure many of you are aware of. We're going to dive in a little bit beyond what you guys are used to seeing online. But today I'll be joined by Bree Media. You know her along with her husband Keith and their awesome dogs Dagwood and Bucket. So we're going to go through a bunch of cool stuff that I think you guys are really going to enjoy. And I'm super excited personally to have this conversation. Bree, welcome to the show and thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We're super stoked. I can feel the energy, even though I can't see the listeners. I know that it's going to be a good one. I know we have a couple things that we want to talk about, that I think, you know, current, you know, dog owners and prospective, people looking to adopt a dog are really going to enjoy hearing about, but we'll start a little bit easier. Maybe you could just give us a little bit of background. Feel free to, you know, go as short or in depth as you want, but a little bit of background on who you are, maybe how you and Keith came to be and how you, you know, dove into this van life that, you know, so many followers know you for.
Sure. So my husband and I are actually both from the East Coast originally. We grew up in Connecticut, which is a far cry from where we live now. And about 5.5 years ago, we decided that we wanted to move out west. And we kind of just fell in love with the desert specifically, which is sort of interesting because we both grew up on the water. And the desert just kind of seemed like the place for us. It was very like wild and primitive and so quiet and peaceful, and really allowed us to get away from the sort of hustle and bustle that we'd known our whole lives. And to pursue that further, we bought this gigantic orange van named Bertha, and decided to move into it with our two dogs, Bucket and Dagwood. And so the four of us moved in there together slightly on a whim. I know it's kind of popular. A lot of people like to document the process of moving into a van, but our process was pretty much throw a bunch of stuff into a couple backpacks and drive away from our apartment. We didn't really take the time to build it out. We sort of thought we could do it as we went, and that's kind of a continual process now, a year and a half later. But we spend most of our time out in the desert, mainly in Utah. We do travel around the Mountain West a bit. We've been down to Mexico and up as far as Oregon, but Bertha's an old lady, so we try to take it easy on her in terms of mileage. But yeah, that's kind of how we got to where we are today, at least.
That's perfect. Awesome. Yeah, I really, I think something that so many followers really probably admire, whether they realize it or not, is almost like the raw factor behind your style of van life. I think that it's become, and here's the thing, I think regardless of how you do it, I think it's good in the long run, but it's definitely becoming a more complex, well thought out planning process.
Right. You know? Yeah, it is. And you know, it's funny because obviously we get asked a lot of questions about what's your advice? And it sounds maybe callous or sort of like cavalier, but I usually tell people to just go. I mean, that's my best advice. Obviously, you know, do a bit of planning. You want to be financially sound. You want to either have your money saved up or know how you're going to continue to make an income or whatever it might be. But in terms of figuring out all of these little finite things, it's just so much better to figure it out as you go. And that's the beautiful thing about the sort of the van life movement, is that there's people who do it from all over the world. There's people young and old, there's families, there's singles, there's couples, there's people like us with dogs. And it's going to be different for everybody. And so I think the best thing to do is just kind of jump in. Don't wiggle the toe in to feel the temperature, just cannonball into it. And, you know, you'll figure it out as you go.
Absolutely. That's perfect. And it's something that, you know, has been pretty recurring with a lot of the really cool people we've had on the show, is, you know, everyone thinks that they had this complex plan, and that's why things, you know, look quote unquote perfect online. And really, it's turning out to be the total opposite, that these people, you know, like yourself, that so many others admire and, you know, want to live a life like, it's more of just about taking action. And it's been a pretty big theme on here, which is super cool. I hope it encourages everybody just to, you know, do, even if that starts out with a weekend trip or something small, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So before you guys dove into the van, I know you mentioned you were bouncing around a little bit as far as living and location. Was adventure and the outdoors always a component of your life? Or is that something that took over when you guys started traveling more consistently in the van?
I think it was probably, I mean, I always sort of point to, I think I kind of like trace it back to this initial feeling that I had. And this is after college. My husband and I, who was not my husband at the time, he's just my boyfriend at the time, but we didn't have anywhere to go because we had already adopted one of our dogs. And my mom was renting a room from someone. Keith's parents had moved out to Pennsylvania, and we really wanted to stay in Connecticut and try to get work and raise up some money, because we knew we wanted to move out west, but we didn't have anywhere to go, didn't have the money to put a down payment on a dog friendly apartment. And I remember having a very difficult conversation with my mom at the time, who kind of said, if you really need a place to stay, you know, you can stay in the house where I'm staying, but I know for a fact that you won't be able to bring your dog. And we said, you know, that's just absolutely not an option for us. And so as a last resort, we ended up living on an old sailboat that Keith's parents were originally going to sell until they heard that we were needing a place to stay. And it sounds super glamorous. Like, people roll their eyes at me all the time when I say, oh, we lived on a sailboat. But it's 33 feet long. And this was on the coast of Connecticut. So super humid in the summer. There's no air conditioning, no running water, electricity that kind of came in and out depending on the power source from the dock that day. And so it was really the first time in my life that I felt like I was like doing something really adventurous. And it really kind of came about because of one of our dogs, Bucket. And so that was really sort of the start of it for us. And I think it really opened our eyes to the fact that, you know, you grow up hearing that there's kind of one way to do things. At least Keith and I felt that way where we grew up, that you know, you grow up, you go to college, you get married, you buy a house, and you live in that house. And I don't think that we ever realized that there's a lot of different ways to do things. And so I think when we were sort of forced into this unique situation, it really opened our eyes, and just the horizon was kind of like right out in front of us all of a sudden, and realizing that we could live wherever we wanted to. We could, you know, a car, a sailboat, you know, we could move wherever we wanted to, as long as we saved up the money. And so it really kind of just expanded our horizons.
Yeah. And it seems like you can always go back, you know, like, this is something we talked about a little bit before. I think people are very timid to make the plunge sometimes to try something different, because we have this idea in our head that, it's a permanent change. And
yes.
I mean, did you ever feel like, I mean, obviously you guys kept moving forward with your plan, but did you ever feel like you wouldn't be able to, you know, go back if you were unhappy?
I mean, I specifically remember, and I think it's funny that you just brought that up because it's probably my favorite advice. My mom actually said to me when we were thinking about moving out to Utah, which, mind you, we didn't know anybody in Utah. I mean, our friends used to joke that we closed our eyes and pointed to a map because never been here, never spent any significant amount of time here. And I remember talking to my mom and saying, like, I'm so scared. Like, what if it doesn't work out? What if I can't find a job? What if we run out of money? You know, we've saved up just this little bit of money. What if we run out before we find work? And, you know, what if I don't like it? What if I don't make friends? You know, all of these things, almost like I'm like going to kindergarten again or something. Yeah. But, and she said to me, she said, what's the worst thing that happens? What's the worst thing that happens? And I said, the worst thing that happens is I fail. I can't cut it out there. And then she says, and then what happens? I said, I come back. And she said, is that so bad? And I was like, no, it's really not. And it's kind of, that's something that I've sort of played out in my head quite often when I'm nervous or when I'm, you know, trying something out for the first time or taking a big leap is, you know, it's scary, but you're never really backed into a corner. You can always change course. You can always turn around. You can always go back. It may not be the same, but you can still go back. And I think the biggest regret that people have, and I hear this over and over and over again, I think the biggest regret that people have is not trying in the first place. I think it is so much, there's so much more at stake if you don't ever try, as opposed to, you know, staying within these safe boundaries that we kind of create for ourselves.
Yeah, I literally couldn't agree more. It's funny once you start to take just a little step towards something that, you know, at some point seemed maybe uncomfortable or outside that comfort zone, and how one step, you know, just really starts to compound into more and more and more. And then eventually you almost hit this point where you're like, okay, am I, you know, exploring a little too much, or, you know, going out of the zone too much? Because you get it, it's addictive, you know, you just get carried away with it.
And it's funny too, because I think sometimes I try to reference, like, remembering what I felt like before I moved out here, how terrified I was. And then thinking about, well, what came of that? You know, like, look at what my life has become because I endured that feeling of being scared, you know? And so I always try to, like, put that into perspective, that if I'm scared about something different right now, remember how scared I was about, you know, this other thing back then and how it turned out. And so I think fear is this really interesting thing, because even though it's a familiar emotion and it's repeated so often in our lives, we come at it the same way every time. Like, we're just, you know, it's our bodies are telling us, like, don't do this, back away from this. But, you know, we always get through it. I think it's like an important thing to sort of put it into perspective and make it useful for your future choices.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's the hard things end up being some of the best, for sure. And, speaking of decisions, let's dive into a little bit about when you guys decided to get your first dog. Did you grow up with dogs? Were you guys dog people before having a dog? What was it like?
So I actually am very pleased to announce, and if anyone follows us kind of closely on Instagram, they are familiar with Lola, which is my childhood dog, who is going to be 18 years old in March.
That's amazing.
And so when I say I grew up with a dog, I am still currently growing up with that dog. So she has been around forever. She's this tiny little teacup chihuahua, and she's awesome. And my mom brought her out here for a trip this past summer to Utah. And I never in a million years thought that dog would be with me in the desert, in my van, running around with my two dogs. So I never thought that I'd get the chance to see Lola out in the desert with my two dogs. And so that was really, really indescribably special experience. So that's my history with dogs. I've always loved dogs. I used to leave my middle school as a kid and walk over to this pet store which I know now, I mean, I wish it was a shelter, but I spent all my time in a pet store as a kid, just sort of playing with all the animals in there. And so I've definitely always loved animals quite a bit. Keith, on the other hand, had one dog in high school, and his parents were really not dog people. And I hate to say that, because I mean, they love our dogs, but they just, it wasn't something that really fit into their lives at the time. I mean, they had four kids. And so Keith was sort of new to the whole being a crazy dog person. And so I very quickly changed the tide on that for him. Because all I ever talked about, I mean, we were together for, I think, 4 years before we got Bucket. And all I ever talked about was getting a dog. And my one thing was that I wanted to wait until I graduated from college, because I wanted to be sure that I was going to be able to really care for this thing. And I've always been very acutely aware of the responsibility that a dog presents, that it's, if you're lucky, 15 or more years of something really relying on you. And it's really something that I was very passionate about. And so I think within 3 weeks of me graduating from college, I was like, okay, now's the time, dog time, dog time. And Keith and I were actually driving across the country. This was sort of my present to myself for graduating from college. I took a bunch of money and I put it all in the gas tank of Keith's Volvo, his old beat up Volvo that he got from his older brother. And we drove across the United States. And when we were out in Oregon, we went to a brewery and we had a fair amount of drinks. And we said, let's make a bucket list of things that we're going to accomplish by the end of this summer, which we know that's not how bucket lists work, but we had our little short term bucket list. And the next morning, Keith found it in his pocket, and we had gotten a little too tipsy. And the only thing that we wrote was get a dog, name it Bucket. And so when we got back to Connecticut, we went up to the Humane Society and looking for our Bucket.
That is super cool. And I'm really glad you shared it, because I think it's something that when people jump on, you know, Instagram and such, that, you know, if they haven't been following you full time, that, you know, they might miss out on. And that's a super good story. And you guys crushed your bucket list faster than most people ever. Probably.
We did. We did. That's, you guys set realistic goals.
Super cool. So you guys are still in Connecticut at the time. What's it like when you bring Bucket home, you know, transition, and where are you guys at? Are you on the sailboat at the time, or what was life like then?
We were on the sailboat. We were on the sailboat, and that was sort of a unique thing. So when we adopted Bucket, we went up to the shelter, and, you know, it was, of course, they had some outside kennels, and we're sort of walking through the rows, and the volunteer who was with us was kind of reading out, oh, this is Gracie and she's, you know, great with kids, or this is Hank and he's recovering from mange, or, you know, all of these things. And we got to this bigger kennel, and there was two dogs, one little black dog who was very friendly and up towards the front of the fence. And then Bucket was sort of cowering in the back corner. And it's like your classic Sarah McLachlan ASPCA commercial, where she's just terribly pitiful looking. And I looked at Keith and I said, that one, I want that one. And I asked the volunteer, I said, what's that one's name? And she's kind of flipping through the paperwork, and she looked at me and she said, it just says puppy number 6. And I remember thinking, like, this is too much. And so yeah. I was like, okay, well, we'll take puppy number 6. And it turns out when they actually found her paperwork inside, her name was Hermadine, which is
solid.
I mean, she was brought up from the South. She was brought up from South Carolina. Which is really interesting, considering that our second dog is also originally from, like, the Carolinas. So whatever it is about there, that's where our dogs come from.
Yeah.
But so she had this weird kind of funky Southern name, but we very quickly changed that to Bucket. And we brought her back to our sailboat, which is an interesting place to have a dog. You know, she was terrified of the dock. Like, she did not like the fact that it was sort of like there was a space in between the wood So we had to carry her down the dock and down the stairs into the boat. And we just kind of stared at each other. And I remember thinking, like, one of these moments where, like, so much has been leading up to this. This is all I've ever wanted. Like, I have this dog. I just adopted a dog. And it was very, like, surreal. And it was the day before 4th of July, because I remember that the next day she was so terrified of the fireworks. And we just sat beneath the sailboat, just, like, clutching her, the three of us, just, like, hiding under the sailboat while all the fireworks went off. And it was amazing, but it was scary. You know, we were young and we were living in this very unique situation. And so very immediately, we realized that we did not just have a dog that was going to live in our house. And maybe sometimes we'd go for walks around the block. This was a living thing that was going to have to come with me everywhere if we were going to make this work. And so I was a nanny at the time. That's how I was making my living. And so I called the family that I nannied for and I said, hey, I just adopted a dog and I can't leave her ever because we live on a sailboat and she will be like a little rotisserie chicken if I leave her here. It's just not safe. And so is it okay if I bring her with me to your house every day? And the woman who I worked for was like, yeah, that's fine.
Oh my gosh.
So Bucket became my assistant nanny and she came to work with me every day. And it was two older kids. I mean, not older, but I think they were like 8 and 10 and they loved her. And it actually really helped her kind of come out of her shell a bit. So that was great. But it was one of those things, like I remember I'd go up to my friend's house and Bucket would come with me. I'd go, you know, out to lunch with my mom. And I'd say like, we have to get a table outside because Bucket's with me and I can't leave her in the car. And so pretty much ever since the day that I have owned dogs myself, it has never really been a house pet for me. It's always been very much like a life co-pilot. I think that's what sort of made the transition into the van a little bit easier, was that I was already so used to having to sort of mold my life around a dog, which to some people that sounds kind of crazy, but it was just so rewarding to me because it's just this indescribable bond. It's like surpasses, like I actually said to my husband the other day, I was like, I feel like this is one of the more spiritual aspects of my life. And that sounds like mega dog crazy, but it's kind of like, you know, if you think back to human beings and how we evolved, like dogs were a pretty huge part of that back in like these tribal days. And like being out in the wild, like with a dog who's with you all the time, there's this mutual understanding. And to be so connected to something that you can't actually speak to or necessarily speak the same language, it's this very like deeply rooted connection that I think when you allow it to grow, it's really remarkable. And so I've felt that with Bucket from day one because of how much of my life revolved around her.
I think life co-pilot is probably the most perfect term I've heard for the description in quite some time. I try and just explain it to people, and obviously you guys are, you know, on an even higher level as far as like the adventuring with your dogs goes, but I try and explain it, and I think it's quite difficult to really, you know, detail the relationship. So I think anymore when people ask me why I'm so freaked out if I have to leave my dog for an hour, I'll just say, well, I have to go get my life co-pilot because
yeah,
it might carry some more weight than I have to go get my dog out, you know?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's absolutely perfect. And now she was, you said that Bucket for quite some time was pretty fearful of things, right?
Yes. Yeah. So she was, and honestly, I think, you know, I used to say to Keith, like, do you think that we're hurting her like more than helping her by kind of consistently? I mean, she didn't have a choice in terms of, do I want to hide in a living room for the rest of my life and just sort of cower on my couch? We didn't really give her that choice. She just came everywhere with me. And I always say, you know, for a while I was discouraged because it took a very long time for her to be trusting and to just walk past people on a trail, no problem. She used to carve like a 30-foot, you know, loop around people to avoid people who are walking past us on a trail. And now she, you know, she just breezes right past everybody. But in the beginning, I was worried that, you know, she's not making any progress and I wanted her to trust the world so badly. And then I sort of realized that all she really needed to trust was me. And I think I was really successful in that, and Keith, of course, but you know, we needed her to trust us that we were not going to ever put her in harm's way, that we were not going to, you know, betray her or hurt her or anything like that. And I think as soon as she realized that, that's where, you know, we really saw her blossom. And, you know, with other people, it took extra time with, you know, someone going by on a skateboard. She's still not that crazy about that. But it, you know, it was always like she would come running to us. And so we knew that she was at least felt safe with us. And I think that exposing her continually and just having her come with us and know that she was safe with us, the outside world was maybe a little scary, but I think it really kind of fostered her bravery a bit more than if we had just sort of let her be afraid. So yeah, she was an interesting, but it's funny because she was so scared that we never really had to train her. Like she never ran away because she was just glued to my leg. She never jumped on people or bothered other people because she was just right on my side. And so that was quite different than when we weren't really prepared when we adopted our second dog because he is completely different. So she was like a very interesting first lesson in dog ownership. I mean, it's so funny. I know there's probably so many people who can relate to having two dogs who are just so different from one another. It's almost like you get the best of multiple worlds in terms of, you know, being a dog owner.
Absolutely. Yeah. It seems like people never quite end up with a dog that's even remotely similar when they have two or more. We actually just had a conversation recently with Elena Presiprich, you know, works at Roughwear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was detailing some pretty similar stuff between her two dogs. It's really funny to see. So that's a perfect transition for us to go into Dagwood's story. What was the time between Bucket and Dagwood, first of all? Like how long until he came around?
So we actually, we left in November. We left the sailboat. It was Hurricane Sandy that came up the coast and forced us to evacuate from our little floating home, which was kind of dramatic. We had sort of already planned to move around that time because it was getting awfully cold down there on the dock. And when Hurricane Sandy rolled through, we were like, you know, it's now or never. We've got money. We've got an apartment that we think might exist. It's kind of funny when you find something online and then drive across the country and just hope that you haven't been scammed.
Absolutely.
So we packed up the cars and Bucket, and she was such a trooper, just sitting in the front seat for, I don't know, 36 hours or whatever it is to drive out there. And we broke it up into days. And actually, it's funny, Keith found the old printed out piece of paper that we had where I had mapped our drive across the country by dog parks. So like we were going to stop at this particular place because there was a big dog park that was just relatively, you know, quick stop off the highway. And so, cause I was like, this is going to be a long drive for her. And so, you know, we made it out to Utah and we got there in November, and it was January when we adopted Dagwood, which actually we've adopted him 5 years ago yesterday. So we celebrated our little anniversary with him yesterday, but it was about, a year and a half, I want to say. We had Bucket was our only child for a year and a half, and then Dagwood came around very soon after we had moved out to Utah. And it was pretty unexpected. Neither of us were really thinking that we would get a second dog. But we lived across the street from a Petco, and we used to walk over to get Bucket's dog food. And we walked over there one day. It was a Saturday, and they were having this adoption event. And we saw Dagwood, and it's funny. Like, I feel almost sort of guilty because I didn't have this exact feeling when I adopted Bucket. I think because this was such, like, more of an unexpected interaction. But I looked at Dagwood, and it was like this completely obsessive, like almost like a panic. Like, I felt very panicked that I needed to get this dog out of this particular crate. And I used to hear people say stuff like that and roll my eyes and be like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then it was really this like intense draw to this dog. And he didn't, I always like to emphasize to people, he did not look at me. He didn't know I existed. He didn't care that I was standing there. He was furiously digging at the corner of that crate, and that was it. And we didn't mean anything to him. And for whatever reason, you know, it's not like, you know, you hear these stories like, oh, this dog looked at me and our eyes locked. No, Dagwood, it was just the top of his head. I was staring at the top of his head. And you know, I Keith kind of felt it too. And he's always the voice of reason. And he was like, you know, we're not supposed to have a second dog with our lease. Like, we can't get a dog right now, blah, 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 listing all these reasons. And I said, you know, okay. And so we left him there, and I just could not stop thinking about that dog. And so I think 2 days, yes, that's right. It was a Saturday. And the next day I tried to call the shelter, but it was Sunday and they were closed. And when I called them again on Monday, they said that someone had adopted him at that adoption event. And I was like crushed, right. Just absolutely crushed. And I think about a month went by and I was still really upset. And Keith suggested that we go up to the same shelter. He said, you know, maybe he was part of a litter, maybe they have similar dogs, you know, whatever. And so we drive up to the shelter and we walk in. And the very first thing I said to the woman behind the desk was, is Dagwood here? Or no, I said, did Dagwood go to a good home? And she said, well, Dagwood did go to a good home, but he came back. And I was like, you know, my eyes were like wide open. She was like, he's here. Do you want to see him?
Oh my gosh,
I was like, yeah. Yes, I want to see him. And they brought him out into this room, and kind of similar, like, he wasn't super interested in us. Like, he was just sort of like, I want to get out of here. Mm-hmm. Like, going up to all the doors and windows, jumping up on the little bench, like, how do I get out of here? And I still just felt this incredible pull towards him. And they said, you know, you have to bring in your other dog to see if they get along before you can take him home. And so Keith went and picked up Bucket and brought her back. And we knew this wouldn't be a problem because Bucket is basically like, this sounds so mean, but she's like a piece of furniture. I mean, yeah. Like, she just like hangs out. Like, just she's chill. So easygoing. Yeah, she's so easygoing. She just gets along with everybody. And so we were like, yeah, this will be fine. And, you know, sure enough, Dagwood was not super interested in her, and she wasn't interested at all in him. And they just kind of walked around this big yard together, and they said, yeah, you know, it looks like they'll be fine. Doesn't seem like they'll have any issues. And, you know, he's yours to take. And $75 later, we got this amazing and very difficult dog. And when we were leaving, you know, they're giving us all of his paperwork, and it lists all the reasons that he had been returned. And that's when we realized that he had been adopted 3 different times already. Wow. And he was just about a year old. One family actually had him for over a month and still brought him back. And I was definitely a little intimidated, but the woman behind the counter was very confident. And she actually told me this. I went up to see them very recently, and she's kind of followed our story with Dagwood. And so she says that she was very confident because, you know, we had described ourselves on our application as like really active, and we're really into camping and blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, we didn't have any small kids. They didn't want him to go to a house with small kids because he was just so rambunctious and, you know, at risk of knocking little kids over and stuff. And so he was couldn't be in a house with cats because he has such high prey drive. And so we really kind of fit all of the boxes that they were hoping to fill for him. So we brought him home, and for about 2.5 years, he destroyed our house on a daily basis.
Oh, man.
He was, albeit adorable about it. I mean, like, I post these pictures kind of frequently, that these old pictures I used to take, like those dog shaming pictures where I would make him sit next to his mess, and he has a huge grin on his face, like he's so proud of himself. And, you know, we used to take him to dog parks, and he would mount every dog that he saw because he just seemed obsessed with knowing where he was in this pecking order.
Right.
He wasn't there to play. He was there to figure out where in the pack he belonged. And it was actually at a dog park one day when a woman said, "Oh, he's an American dingo." And I kind of laughed, because if I had a dime for every dingo ate my baby joke,
yeah.
we'd heard this so much. Oh, he looks like a dingo. He looks like a dingo. And we were like, yeah. You know, it just said shepherd mix when we adopted him, and we didn't care. And she said, "No, you should Google it. You should look it up." And sure enough, we get to the car, and I pulled my phone out and I typed it in, and I was like, jaw on the floor, like, right. I'm looking at pages and pages and pages of Dagwoods. And it was really amazing, because not only did we figure out right then what he was, because he is textbook, I mean, everything from the color of his fur to even like the whiteness on his paw, I mean, everything is like to the breed standard. And it's actually, we would have been able to register him with the American Rare Breed Association if he wasn't fixed, which we're glad that he's fixed, obviously.
Right.
But this is like a very unique dog, and so many things started falling into place in terms of his behavior, because the United Kennel Club actually classifies them as a pariah dog. And what that means is they are little removed from an early ancestral type, meaning that there has been no human intervention in the way that Dagwood is. We've never clipped his nails. He is like perfectly temperature regulating. I mean, all of these things, it's like natural selection.
Right.
And still very primitive. And that was the thing that we had noticed the most. I mean, I watched this dog maybe a month after we got him. I watched him dig in a dry riverbed until the hole filled up with water and just started, and like, it was the most normal thing in the world. And then off he went down the, you know, and he was, unfortunately, you know, we'd go out in the desert and he'd come around the corner with a jackrabbit in his mouth.
Yeah.
And I was like, first of all, how are you fast enough to even catch one of those things? And he was just, I mean, he's so many things about him. Just, it's almost hard to describe. But it's like watching a wild animal. So many people would come around the corner on a trail and be really scared of him because they weren't sure. We had to get him a really bright colored collar. When we're out in really remote places, we put like this little orange vest on him because he just fits in too well.
Yeah.
Like, he just looked like he belongs out there. And so it was really amazing to discover this history. And, you know, it's funny, when we really started reading it, it says, you know, if you're going to have a Carolina dog, they require thorough and early training compared to less recently domesticated breeds. But the one thing that we kept reading about, with these dogs is the bond, that there is a super, super strong bond because they are still very much accustomed to this concept of a pack. And, you know, it's funny, like, even when we're sleeping in the van, Dagwood has his spot like he'll sleep on the bench seat because it's closer to the door, because he is like protecting us. When we're eating, Bucket sits there like the little goblin that she is and waits for us to give her. But Dagwood will go sit out on the perimeter and, you know, keep like a watchful eye while the rest of us are eating. And so it's like this really interesting sort of behaviors that are, that can be kind of traced back to, you know, dogs of long ago. And so it was, it's been a journey for sure. But I mean, it was once we knew what he was, it explained a lot of the behaviors, good and bad.
Yeah, I'm loving every minute of this. It's super cool. And I think a lot of people are going to really appreciate the story and the lessons you've learned, because not every dog you bring home is, you know, super chill and ready to hang out on a couch. And, you know, a lot of them have a personality of their own. And, you know, some of them are super extreme. And so what are, you know, if a lot of times, especially when you're unfamiliar with a breed, or you're rescuing a mixed breed, a lot of times it's, I don't want to say a gamble, because, you know, you can make anything work out really well, pretty much. But a lot of times it's uncharted territory. And, you know, for us that are looking to rescue a dog, and if you get a dog that, you know, is super demanding, or, you know, in quote unquote difficult, or presents challenges like Dagwood has, what, you know, I know you've offered some pieces already, but what are some things that you would recommend to someone in that position that, you know, maybe is even panicking a little bit, you know, which I'm sure you felt certain days, like, oh my gosh, like, is this something we can handle? What would you say to someone like that right now?
You know, I think there were definitely days. I remember I walked across the street one day in tears, to the Petco, and because I knew they had trainers there, and I wanted to sign Dagwood up. And I remember the lady looking at me, and she said, "Well, what does he need to improve on? Just, you know, basic manners." And I thought to myself, "Oh my God, lady,
you're doomed.
Basic manners. Yeah, sure. Let's start there and go down the laundry list of everything else." I think that if you have a breed, or you have just a dog, first of all, I say this to everyone. I mean, it doesn't matter the dog. A tired dog is a good dog. Dagwood was the type of dog, even if we will eventually live in a house again, and he'll have to, you know, maybe deal with that. But he was the type of dog who needed to get outside every day. And that wasn't just a backyard. That was a trail run. That was a mountain bike ride. That was, you know, hiking up in a canyon, or I even have certain spots where I would just go sit and let them, because I knew there was a bunch of little groundhogs that would drive him nuts for like an hour, and he would just run from hole to hole to hole. And so I think having some go-to strategies, in terms of things you know that your dog loves, and really committing to them. And I think that definitely stems from being really honest up front. And I don't think that this is a topic that's really talked about enough, but it is okay to admit that you can't handle it. I say all the time, and it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but if those three families had not brought Dagwood back, he would not have found us, and we would never have, you know, been able to give him this life. And I mean, there are plenty of Carolina dogs who are living in houses with owners who understand them. And I think that, you know, before you adopt a dog, just know what your energy level is. What can you commit to this dog? If you know it's an active dog, if it's a shepherd mix, if it's a working dog, a dog that wants a job, just kind of commit to saying, you know, I'm going to understand this dog on a deeper level than just a creature that needs food and shelter. You know, and I think that if you go into it being honest with yourself, then you can absolutely make it work. I think that if you're having, you know, some difficulties, there are breed specific trainers that are really great. I mean, maybe don't just walk across the street and find any old trainer. I think that there's a lot of folks that can help with really dominant and difficult dogs. But mainly, I think that just taking the extra time to understand what makes your dog tick. There are things about Dagwood I can preemptively sort of know what he's going to do in a situation. He's really not that great in fenced-in dog parks because he just walks around and humps everybody. He just wants to know where he is in the pecking order, who he's more dominant over. And so we just kind of avoid those. We stick more to trails, you know, or sometimes even if we're in the city and I've got to go to a doctor's appointment and I have to drop him at a friend's house, just I'll go for a quick run with him. But really kind of committing to the level of energy that your dog needs and then understanding what is good for them and what is not good for them and not beating yourself up about it. You know, I have a friend who's got a pretty difficult dog and she just feels like it's all her fault and she didn't do enough or she isn't doing enough. And, you know, dogs, for the most part, you know, they can be pretty simple creatures in terms of what they need from us. And I think that if you just take the time to understand that from them, the payback is huge. The reward is huge. But yeah, I think it's really important to just let people know that, you know, if you have a dog that's difficult or you feel like you can't handle it, it is okay to seek help. And it is okay to sort of say, maybe I'm not the person who's best for this dog. And then, you know, if you want to stick it out and commit to it, just you've really got to commit to it and find a rhythm with your dog. And honestly, that took us maybe 2 or so years with Dagwood to find what he really needed and what made him tick and sort of, you know, where he excelled and where his weaknesses are. And, you know, sometimes you just have to really love them despite all of it and sort of find humor in it. You know, he would destroy things, but they're just things. I have this amazing little creature that lives with me and shares my life with me. And it's definitely more important than the notebook that he shredded or the bag of potatoes that he dragged across a room inexplicably. And so I think trying to remember that you have this very amazing little creature that has all this love to give, I think that can help in those really frustrating moments and just knowing that you're doing your best and doing the best you can for them.
Yeah, so many good points. I'm writing pretty furiously because I like so much of it. I think that beginning portion when, you know, when you decide that you want a dog, especially for a lot of people, it's a very exciting point. And if they haven't had a dog, it's, you know, it's, like I said, some uncharted territory. But I think it's really cool to see if that persists for a little bit. And, you know, especially for people that aren't sure if they can handle it, you know, make sure that you really are ready or at least committed to bringing that dog into your life because, you know, he or she hopefully will be with you for, you know, a decade and a half. And that's a huge chunk of time. And it's like, I don't know, a dog is looking you in the eyes and not saying this, but, you know, knowing that his or her whole life is totally yours. And, you know what I mean? Like just you being committed, not even thinking you have all the answers or knowing what you need to do to take care of that dog that comes with time, but just total commitment. And, really, like you said, I think a huge point was getting to know your dog. My dog Oakley was absolutely, oh my God, he was nothing like my new dog River. And like, it's so cool to learn about your dog, just like, you know, a kid shouldn't be forced to go to college if, you know, he or she is not meant to go to college. Not right. All dogs should be at a dog park, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I think that, you know, we have this idea almost of like we all see, you know, like a Purina commercial where there's this like happy, happy golden retriever who's super well behaved and great with kids. And there's the little cat sitting right next to him. And like we have this idea of like what a dog is supposed to be. I love what you just said. And, you know, you'd never expect every single person to be the same. And, you know, I absolutely consider dogs, I mean, I consider dogs to be people, but that's just because I'm kind of crazy. But I think that they have, you know, they can be just as varied in their personalities and in their, I mean, there's so many little things about Bucket and Dagwood that just crack me up. Like the things that they don't like, you know, when we're driving and you know, the little bumps on the side of the road to let you know that you've moved out of the lane. Bucket hates those. And so throughout our group of friends, you know, from all the car rides we've taken with people, she will like fly up from her seat and like run to the back of the van or jump into the trunk because she just hates those bumps. And so all of our friends call them Bucket bumps. and it's just this thing that's stuck, and it's like these funny little things. And it's like, why does she not like that? You know, like there's no real like reason, because Dagwood's completely unfazed by them. He doesn't care at all. And so these are two dogs who for the most part were raised exactly the same way. And I think that that's such a classic example of, you know, committing to when you adopt a dog, that dog is going to tell you who they are. You are not going to tell that dog who they are. It's your responsibility to say, I'm going to care for this dog. I'm going to do everything in my power to make this relationship work and make it healthy and make this dog happy. I mean, you would never enter into a relationship by trying to force another person to fit into the lines you've already drawn. I mean, there has to be some compromise there, and there has to be, you know, this period where you get to know each other and I'm going to change this about me and you're going to change this about you. And, you know, it could be small things like maybe don't leave your leftover food on the coffee table anymore because it's going to get eaten. But you know, it's like these tiny little things that you adjust to make room for this other being in your life. And you never know, because you can get a Bucket or a Dagwood or a River or an Oakley. You know what I mean? They're all so different and unique. And I think that that's the amazing part of going and adopting a dog and why it should be taken so seriously, because this is a unique individual being with a mind and a personality and funny little quirks that you're going to get to know. And it's not probably going to be what you think it is. And I think that's the best part, is that it's just such a learning experience. I never in a million years thought that I would end up where I am now. And I honestly feel very comfortable saying that a huge part of that is because of my dogs. Like, my dogs have like made me more of who I am today than anything else. And people look at me kind of weird when I say that, but it's because I've sort of watched who they are and just kind of let them develop into these very unique little beings, and then sort of followed their lead into, like, I don't know, it's weird. It's like my dogs have taught me how to like be wild and be okay with being a little bit different. And they're just the best teachers if we sit back and watch them.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I'm literally blown away by that every day. And you put it so perfectly, just how a animal, and like you said, as many of us would consider, you know, equivalent to a person, just how they can teach so much without ever saying a single word. I don't get it. Like, it's crazy. It really is mind blowing. But day in, day out, new lessons are learned. And, you know, like you said, you never know what type of dog you're going to get. That commitment, though, I think is such a huge portion of it. And, you know, give it time and you'll figure out who your dog is. And I think along the way, you'll probably find out just as much, if not more, about yourself. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
So this has all been literally perfect. It's so good to hear your stories. And I really enjoy hearing just the the vast difference between the two of them. Where are you guys? Where are you at now? What's on the horizon for you guys and future adventures, future plans, or just kind of cruising it out?
Yeah, we're in Utah. It's the cold season, which is not really our bag. We're summer creatures. We're waiting for the day when we can all go cannonball into the Colorado River again. But we're just kind of hanging out in Utah. The desert is supposed to be 55 this coming weekend. And so we're going to go down to southern Utah. It's actually going to be my 28th birthday. And we are going to celebrate by running around in the desert with the dogs and just kind of, I don't know, I could sit there all day and just watch them. So that's usually what I do in my spare time. When I'm not checking emails or holding my phone, I can just sort of put everything down and just watch them run. And it's pretty awesome. So I think we'll do a little mountain biking and yeah, just kind of wait it out till our favorite season rolls around again. And then we'll be back in the desert.
Awesome. Yeah, it doesn't sound like too bad of a upcoming time for sure. And
yeah.
Happy early birthday. That's super cool.
Thank you.
You know, like I said, just really super appreciative for you sharing your story, just because I think, and I say this to most of our guests and people that reach out to us, I think that things like Instagram are a really beautiful tool. I think it's so cool. I've connected with some really remarkable people over the past couple of years just by, you know, the power of an Instagram message. But
right.
I think it also has a point where you got to take a step back and, you know, not spend too many minutes on it and, you know, live your own life and take action. And I think hearing your story and, you know, along with our other guests, I think that it gives people a little more of a human characteristic to what we see on the daily.
Yeah.
So just super thankful that, you know, you took the time to come on, and I know our listeners will really appreciate it for sure.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's always really fun to be able to not have a limit on the number of words I can write or say.
Yeah.
'Cause I'm known for my super long Instagram captions. And so it's nice to actually talk it out every now and again. So thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And couldn't agree more. It's heartbreaking sometimes to only try to put things into a sentence or two. And
right.
Then if you write too much, they, you know, reduce the coverage that your post gets, so no one gets to read it. And
exactly.
It's a little backwards.
Yep.
Where could our listeners and everyone else find you guys online if they're interested in, you know, learning more or just checking out some photos?
So we can be found on Instagram under the handle Brianna Media, and that's BriannaMadia. And you'll know you're in the right spot if everything is orange.
Just look for the big orange van.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, everybody. That concludes episode 7 of the Trail Talk podcast. I want to thank you so much for checking it out, stopping by, tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the message from Brianna Media. As you guys know, she is super awesome. Her, Keith, and their two dogs are more than an inspiration to all of us, and I'm really stoked that we had them on the show. Hope you enjoyed all of the conversation, and just one final message out there to all of you to check out our new Patreon page. You can check it out at Patreon, that's patreon.com/traildogs. If you guys want to support everything we're doing here on the podcast, on our website, and now on YouTube, you can do so by visiting that page, and we will offer exclusive content to those that are able to throw out a few dollars, just a trade off for maybe a coffee here or there, and you'll get some really great content out of it. Other than that, guys, I hope you have an awesome day, awesome night, depending on when you're listening to this. And ending message, as always, continue to enjoy life and give your dog a life worth living.